From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Towns Van Zandt, Guy Clark, Daniel Johnston, and Little Joe. It's Texas music as presented by the Oxford American. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The Oxford American is a national magazine dedicated to featuring the best of Southern writing while documenting the complexity and vitality of the American South. Every year, the December issue of the magazine is dedicated to the music of a Southern state, and this year, Texas gets a turn. Roger Hodge is the editor of the Oxford American.
There's so much music in Texas. We're just drowning in riches. We have so many great stories and so many great musicians and songwriters and traditions, and Texas is even more complex, of course, because you have different languages. You have music in Spanish, and then the sort of mixture of everything. You've got the blues, you've got jazz, you've got country, punk, Tejano. I mean, there's so much to do, so much we could have done. We could devote a whole year to Texas music easily, but as it is, we do a music issue every year. And this year it was Texas, and we did our best to tell some good Texas music stories.
When you talk about Texas music, of course, people, Buddy Holly, Willie mm-hmm. Nelson, all these people, they rise to the top immediately. But the bench is so deep. These other folks that you have covered, Johnny Winter, who we lost this year, coming from any state would be a first stringer.
Oh, yeah. There's a temptation when you're doing a magazine to put the biggest star, to cover the biggest star, to put the biggest star on the cover. Well, that's kind of easy to do and kind of expected. There's so much in Texas music that we thought, well, let's take a little bit of an oblique angle on these things.
Right, because you've got something like Texas Monthly covering this type of stuff all the time. How is Oxford American going to unearth something different, new that hasn't been covered before?
Right, and I read the text. I read Texas Monthly all the time, and they did a beautiful story on Guy in the last couple of years, but it was a different story. It was written by a journalist. It wasn't written by someone who was close to him, and I thought Tamara brought something new to it, which was reading him as a poet, and he really thinks of himself as a poet songwriter, and I just thought that was a different angle on things. Likewise, Joe Nick Petoskey's writing about Paul English, not writing about Willie Nelson. He wrote a book about Willie Nelson, but this is an angle on the Willie Nelson phenomenon that is different, and you learn a lot about Paul English, and he is a true Texas character, but you also learn a lot about Willie Nelson from coming at it at a slightly coming at the material from a slightly different angle.
Let's talk about that CD that comes with the magazine. How hard was it to pick the cuts for that?
Very, very difficult. In a way, it's even harder than deciding what stories you're going to tell.
Kinky Friedman, that was a surprise.
Yeah, Kinky. I mean, I love that song. It is so funny, and that's an early one.
It says, "We reserve the right to refuse service to you."
Yeah, and he takes that song in such a funny direction. It's a masterpiece.
Roger Hodge is the editor of the Oxford American. The December issue is focused on Texas music. It can be ordered online at oxfordamerican.org.
Say, partner, can't you read the sign? We reserve the right to refuse service to you. Take your business back to Walgreens. Have you tried your local zoo? You smell just like a communist. You come through just like a Jew. We reserve the right to refuse service.
To you. Texas is rich with great songwriters who didn't find massive global fame, but they minted hits for others. Guy Clark fits into this category. He won a Grammy this year for Best Folk Album for My Favorite Picture of You. But he's been producing records since 1975, and he is seen as a songwriter's songwriter. But Tamara Saviano writes in the Oxford American, Guy Clark is actually an old-school poet.
He's definitely not a household name, and I don't know why. I think if anybody took the time to listen to his songs, he would be. He writes for the common man, but he doesn't write fluff. His songs are, you know, short stories. So if you're looking for a, you know, a pop ditty, Guy Clark's probably not your guy.
But as you write in your article, you established that he never really was somebody who was chasing the elusive fame.
No, never. When he got his first record deal with RCA and he put out Old Number One, that record was definitely a folk album and has had a lot of critical acclaim and it sold, you know, okay. And I think after that, the major record labels thought that they could, you know, fit Guy Clark into country music. And they tried. They tried for several albums, first RCA and then Warner Brothers. And it just wasn't Guy's thing. He just wasn't happy. And it didn't work. His songs didn't translate in that slicker, more polished arrangement. So when he went back to doing his own thing, which is really being a folk singer and writing folk songs, it just worked much better. And he was able to go out by himself with a guitar and play for the people. And that's what he's done for, you know, more than 40 years.
Now he's a wino, tried and true. Done about everything there is to do. And he worked on freighters, and he worked in bars, and he worked on farms, and he worked on cars. And there was white port to put that look in his eye. Grown men get when they need to cry, and we sat down on a curb to rest, and his head just fell down on his chest. He says every single day it gets just a little bit harder to handle, and yet. And he lost the thread, and his mind got cluttered, and the words just rolled off down the gutter.
You write about his lyrics as poetry, straight up poetry,
yeah.
And that he himself thinks of himself as a poet.
He does. For example, Desperado's Waiting for a Train, which is one of his most famous songs and has been recorded by, you know, the Highwaymen and a bunch of people. That song is about a man named Jack Prigg, who was like a grandfather to Guy, lived with in the hotel that Guy's grandmother owned in Monahans, Texas. And he and Guy had a very close relationship, and many years after Prigg died in 1970, 5 years later, when Guy wrote Desperado's Waiting for a Train, he sat down to write a poem about Jack Prigg. He knew he was going to write it, you know, to be sung, write it as a song, but the way he approaches the writing is as a poet. It has to, the words have to work first.
And I'd play the Red River Valley. And he'd sit in the kitchen and cry, run his fingers through 70 years of living, and wonder, Lord, as ever will I drill gone dry. With friends, me and this old man was like desperados waiting for a train, like desperados waiting for a train.
And that shows that many of his songs or poems are autobiographical, springing from his organically from his life.
Absolutely, absolutely, many of them. He wrote The Randall Knife after his father died. And again, specifically sat down to write about his father. Most recently, his wife, Susanna, died in 2012. And before she died, you know, she had been ill for a while. and he wrote My Favorite Picture of You, about Susanna. He, you know, many of his songs, Texas 1947 is from his life. Let Him Roll is partially, you know, from his life based on a character that he knew, South Coast of Texas, about, you know, living in Rockport. Many songs are about his life.
My favorite picture of you is the one where you're staring straight into the lens. Just a Polaroid shot someone took on the spot. No beginning, no end. It's just a moment in time. Can't have back. Never left, but your bags were packed just in case. My favorite picture of you has been and it's faded and it's been on my wall. Oh, and you were so angry, it's hard to believe. There's a fire in your eyes, you've got your heart on your sleeve, curse on your lips, but all I can see is beautiful.
So in this era where so much music is artificial and predictable, why do we need Guy Clark's influence?
You know, stories are kind of food for our journey through life. All, you know, poetry and fiction stories and real stories and just, you know, the stories that we share is what connects us as humans. And I think it's important to tell those stories in whatever medium works. And this happens to be Guy's medium. I can't imagine not being able to put on a Guy Clark record and listen to his stories.
Tamara Saviano writes about Guy Clark's lyrics as poetry in the current issue of the Oxford American. Saviano is a Grammy-winning producer and is writing a biography about Guy Clark.
This is Naomi Shihab Nye. We always needed you. Townes Van Zandt kissed me on the cheek after I guarded his guitar. He had stayed in the bathroom a very long time. I asked if he needed food, and he said, I never eat. Dark bar, people milling and mingling. From towns, we learned the potency of the word mingle. Learned that nothing was not nothing. That night, he walked me outside. You could always feel his need to get away. I turned the key in my car as he stood there, his voice blaring from the stereo. This shook me up. In those days, I never removed his tape. He smiled sadly. Okay then, bye. Bye. He was wearing a brown suede jacket. I touched my cheek in the huge dark, sat a long time before driving. When he died on New Year's Day 1997, I entered the internet for the very first time. Shocking how much was already there. Where did it come from? Obituaries mingling with family photos, bio notes, music reviews, reports on his tour. I stayed at that screen the whole day, transported, lost, then rose in a blur. From that day on, we would always have so much more than we needed.
Is that true? Is the poem true? Was that a real encounter?
It was a real encounter. I was a big Townes Van Zandt fan, so I had spoken with him at different small concerts of his I would attend. And that was one night in a mysterious place on the north side of San Antonio. And he was looking around nervously at the break time, and he caught my eye or something. I was sitting in the front, and he said, hey, how are you? And I had asked his permission to use some quotes from his songs at the tops of a couple of old poems of mine. And he thought that was a little odd, a little funny. Why would anyone want to quote a song at the top of a poem? But so he recognized me. We'd talked before. And he said, could you help me out? Could you watch this guitar? And so that was the story. I just watched it and held it.
I really get the sense of the fragility of him as a person in the story, in the poem.
Right. He seemed very fragile at that time and very delicate and very lonesome. And that feeling that you got in many of his songs, too, that in a crowd, you know, mingling was an effort. And he'd go outside if at all possible. And it was just such a strange thing to have, to be obsessed about a particular musician and his music, and then have him actually standing there when I turned the key in the car, to have his voice come out of the radio with the speaker with him standing there was possibly one of the more surreal moments in my life up till that time.
Was he already established as this fantastic, probably, he's known as probably one of the greatest songwriters to come out of Texas?
Well, you know, he was, but he still played sometimes to very small crowds and to odd groups of people who didn't seem to appreciate who he was. I mean, I remember shushing crowds at different places when he would start singing, thinking, don't these people realize who this is on the stand? Why are they chatting? They need to listen. This is great. I always respected the ways he would sing, even if he had a very tiny audience, with as much gusto or intention or passion as he did to a very large audience. So he was one of those true artists. The crowd size didn't matter. He would give it his best.
How do you see this poem fitting in with all of your other work?
Well, it's an anecdotal poem, and I think one thing about my work is I'm always trying to find clarity or simplicity out of the clutter and chaos of our lives. And to me, it's ironic that the first time I ever became passionate about looking anything up on the internet, it was about his death. And because his most famous song, or one of his most famous songs, was If I Needed You, Would You Come to Me? So, you know, up till that moment, I had never needed to look anything up on the internet. I'd never felt a lack of anything. And suddenly, when it's right there in front of you and you look it up, and then for the rest of your life, you're going to have more information than you need about everything. It just sort of went with the song. So for me, it's kind of on the beam of what my work tries to do, figure out what it is we need out of every episode or scene or encounter or connection. And we'll always need him. We'll always need his voice. Anybody who fell in love with it way back then or has discovered it even since his death knows what an incredible voice it was and what a great songwriter he was.
Naomi Shihab Nye is an internationally respected poet who lives in San Antonio. Her poem about Towns Van Zandt is in the current issue of the Oxford American.
Well, if I needed you, would you come to me? Would you come to me and ease my pain? If you needed me, I would come to you. I'd swim the seas for to ease your pain. In the night forlorn, all the morning's born, and the morning shines with the lights of love. You will miss sunrise if you close your eyes. That would break my heart in two.
Although he wasn't born and raised in Texas, Daniel Johnston is considered a Texas songwriter and performer because he is so closely associated with Austin. It was in the 1980s that Johnston rose to fame with his unusual songs and strange behavior. He's been diagnosed with schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Lewis Black, who is the founder of South by Southwest and the co-founder and editor of the Austin Chronicle, says Austin is the only city where Johnston could have been discovered and celebrated.
The circumstances were, you know, that you had a flourishing music scene. that it was really, as with Boston, it's never ever one kind of music. There's blues and there's rock and there's country and there's, you know, indie, and there's all different kinds, and everybody listens to everybody else. And to have somebody like an outsider singer-songwriter like Daniel show up and in a very short period of time be on everybody's radar, everybody taking him seriously because of the quality of his work, I think for all those circumstances sent together, would it be very difficult in someplace else at some other time.
Do you hear the frog?
Huh? How are you?
Try to remember, but my feelings can't know for sure. Try to reach out, but it's gone. Lucky star in your eye. I am walking the cow. I really don't know how I came here. I really
I was in Austin going to UT at that time, and my roommates was working at the McDonald's with Daniel Johnston. And he would come home and he would tell us that there's this weird guy and he's making music. He wants me to join a band with him and all this stuff. And he would bring home the tapes and we would listen to him and we would wonder, what is going on here? My memories of Daniel Johnston are like didn't exactly at first, he didn't emerge from the froth as everyone recognizing him as this genius, savant person. He was kind of either laughed at or puzzled with.
I think it was broader range than that. I think there were, Brian Beattie and I have different memories of one of his first shows at the Beach, where Brian remembers everybody shutting up and listening to him, and I remember everybody at the bar talking and ignoring him, but a whole lot of people in the room paying attention. And one of the things was he attracted attention immediately from, like, some of the big boys, from True Believers. There were some, and Glass Eye, there were some of the most serious bands in town that literally the first time they heard his tapes started paying attention. There were other people who thought he was a joke or not even worth taking seriously. And in 1990, you know, years later when he played the Austin Music Awards, it was really galvanizing because some people really thought it was, you know, one of the great musical highlights of their life. And other people thought the emperor just walked on stage, stark raving naked, and people were raving about his clothes. And so the thing with Daniel, it was always, he was never entirely gotten, but he was never entirely not gotten.
It seems like, you know, you're looking at art when people are still debating on whether or not it's actually art.
Well, I thought what was fascinating for somebody like myself, where I listened to Daniel so much in those early days and encountering so many of those tapes, Hi, How Are You, Yep, Junk Music, Retired Boxer, all pretty much at once, you know, over a period of weeks, not years. And there's all this, and if you're getting it, if you're listening to it, and I was emotionally very sympathetic with it, you're kind of knocked out by the quality. And on the other hand, you're dealing with this, you know, really crazed, really nervous, really hyper individual, and so it's a very strange dichotomy.
Lewis Black is the founder of South by Southwest and the co-founder and editor of the Austin Chronicle. He writes about Daniel Johnston in the December issue of the Oxford American.
True love will find you in the end. You'll find out just who was your friend. Don't be sad, I know you will. but don't give up until true love will find you in the end. This is a promise with a catch. Only if you're looking can it find you. True love is searching too.
When you think about legendary Texas musicians, you may not immediately think of Little Joe, but maybe you should. Little Joe y La Familia have been performing around the state for over 50 years and defining the Latin sounds known as Tejano. Writer and journalist Michelle Garcia says Little Joe and other Tejano and Cajunto musicians are part of the land of Texas.
The story begins soon after I arrived in Austin, and it couldn't have been more serendipitous that Little Joe y La Familia would be performing. It was a special performance in South Austin. A friend told me about it, and I went. And it was really, truly a homecoming, because Little Joe y La Familia represents both culturally, historically, musically, the combination of so much of a very complex sound that mixes conjunto, mixes orquesta, mixes so many genres of boleros, of polkas. And so I went to his concert and of course was so moved by, you know, what may be one of the most important Texas songs, period, which is Las Nubes. And that song tells that story again, of longing for home, longing for a place, and of course, of renewal, of return.
Michelle Garcia is a writer and journalist. She writes about Little Joe y La Familia and Cajunto music in the December issue of the Oxford American. You can order it online at oxfordamerican.org.
No me puedo resistir. Si voy a seguir sufriendo, mejor quisiera morir. Yo voy vagando en el mundo sin saber a dónde ir. Los años que van pasando, no me canso de esperar. Y a veces que estoy cantando, mejor quisiera llorar. ¿Para qué seguir sufriendo si nada puedo lograr? Las nubes que van pasando se paran a llorar. Parece que se sostienen cuando a mí me oyen cantar.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us at texasmatters@tpr.org. We invite you to comment on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can listen to past Texas Matters. And you can also find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.